I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Mike Lupica of the New York Daily News and SportsOnEarth.com.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
And this is the Sports Reporters Podcast. Welcome back to our Friday morning edition of this. A lot to talk about. The baseball playoffs are in full swing. But the biggest story, guys, in sports for a couple of days this week, and in a way, I think it's a perfect controversy for the modern world. Cam Newton, the quarterback of the Carolina Panthers, was asked a question about pass routes by Jordan Rodrigue, a woman reporter. And he thought it was funny, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, to hear a woman talking about pass routes. And of course, it just takes one tossed match to cause a conflagration, and it did. And he ended up losing a sponsorship with Dannon. He didn't apologize to Jordan Rodrigue immediately. She then found out that when you are in the news this way, people will go back and pick through your own life and prosecute you for some tweets she sent out years ago. And I guess, guys, the place to start with this, and again, no one is absolving Newton, okay? I don't think this was the crime of the century. No one is absolving him. But when is one of these athletes going to get the apology right in the moment and not respond more than to the blowback that he's gotten?
Well, let's listen to the comment here, because I think, as it's said, is part of the actual story. It's not provoked in any way. Lou, you've got that to play. Hit it.
I know you take a lot of pride in seeing your receivers play well. Devin Funchess has seemed to really embrace the physicality of his routes and getting those extra yards. Does that give you a little bit of an enjoyment to see him kind of truck sticking people out there?
It's funny to hear a female talk about routes. Like, it's funny.
So we've all been in situations where guys have said things that have become national stories, and it's been a back and forth between them and a reporter. It's after a game. They're in the heat of the moment. Somebody says something that provokes a comment, and then they just isolate on the words, and it becomes a national story. This is part of the reason it became the story. It's a perfectly good question, a perfectly legitimate thing in a press conference in the middle of the week, and out of the blue, in this cute kind of self-effacing way that Cam Newton has been all the time, he makes this ridiculous comment. And that, I think, is a big part of why you had the blowback, Mike, and you had the reaction, because it's like, wow, this guy's just thinking this. It's not in the heat in a moment. It's that this is just how he feels about women reporters. And what it ticked into, and Bob, we all know this because we've been in this game a long time, there's a whole mentality that female reporters have had to deal with ever since they've been in the game. And whenever this stuff shows its ugly head, we need to remind people how difficult it is on a daily basis for women just to sort of do the job.
No question. We've all watched an evolution of women reporting sports, as we have all observed the evolution of women becoming more and more passionate and knowledgeable fans of sport. It struck me as just ridiculous, the idea that he would be so astonished at this point in time that he has never encountered or been aware of women in sports directly. Or, you know, and I know you got to figure he's a sports fan. He's got to know about Doris Burke or Beth Mowins or something. And he could have gotten out of it, I'm sorry about that. You know, I mean, he could have easily have corrected himself and quasi apologized, and not waited 2 days to have this long, heartfelt thing. But it's just amazing. But here, let me just say this: I think we would be naive, you, the three of us, and anybody listening, to think that we have come so far as to assume that all males are accepting women in sports, because it's not just the football player in question here, but there are still countless males who do not acknowledge women and sport as being paired up at all. And this is part of the reason why women's sports are undercovered and underappreciated in general.
And Mitch, I want to make this clear. I'm on Jordan Rodrigue's side of this. She was insulted in a gender-specific way. My own bona fides in the this area are pretty well documented. Nobody hit Victor Kiam harder for the whole incident with Lisa Olsen in the Patriots locker room 100 years ago. Nobody who had a typewriter or a laptop did. And Melissa Ludke Lincoln was a friend of mine, and I, you know, I stood by her and fought that fight. But what is always interesting to me, when something like this happens, and again, he said a boneheaded thing. He insulted this young woman for no reason, and then it took him too long to apologize. It's just that when something like this happens, and it is treated like World War III, I understand that a statement had to be made by the team, by the coach, by everybody involved in this before we got into the sidebar of her old tweets. Sometimes we just lose context and proportion here and make these stories out to be more than they were. Was it stupid? Yes. Was it the crime of the century? No, it wasn't. And Dannon's reaction was just a part of the perfect reaction to a perfect modern story.
Well, okay. I agree with your sentiment that no, it's not the crime of the century. None of these things are the crime of the century. But it'll be gone by the weekend, too. I mean, it burns hot and it burns across the country, but it burns fast. And the reason that Dannon dropped him is because Dannon is a yogurt. I have no stats, but I'm pretty sure that there are a large female contingent consuming yogurt. I said I have no stats, and I'm perfectly willing to say, be surprised to find out that many eat yogurt 5 times to 1. But you know, as a sponsor, sponsors are always on Tinder hooks with athletes. And I honestly don't have a problem with them canceling him because sponsorships are not rights, okay? You don't earn a sponsorship. It's given to you because of who you are and what you can sell for them as a spokesman for the product. And if they don't think all of a sudden you're going to help them sell whatever it is, yogurt, tires, widgets, they fire you. And that's perfectly fine. You were hired for a certain reason, your image. And if your image is sullied in some way, then you give it up. And that is beyond question. I'll tell you the thing that bothered me a little bit more about this, and this is not inside baseball, but this is good for our listeners of our podcast to understand. There are two elements of it. First of all, nobody in the room called him on it. You know, when right. He made that comment, that would have been interesting to hear some of our fellow reporters say, hey, Cam, why do you think it's funny that a female reporter, nobody followed up on that. They just asked another question. But she went up to him afterwards and said to him, why do you think this is funny? He did not apologize to her then when he had the opportunity, even though the team characterized it as a yes, they did. And she said, no, he didn't. And apparently she said to him, do you know who I am? Do you know my name? And he said, no, I don't. And she'd been covering the team for the Charlotte Observer, which is the big paper that covers the team, for a year. That speaks to me about the sense of privilege that a lot of the athletes that we cover have about, you guys are all just this amorphous, you know, faceless group of people who are here to adore me or make me look good. And I always acknowledge you when one of you makes me look bad. And the fact that he doesn't even know who she is and she's a beat reporter for the team speaks volumes about his insensitivity as well.
Don't you think that speaks more to just completely the way this business has changed? We talk about this all the time.
Yeah.
That athletes don't. There was a time when we all broke into the business where there was a spirit of cooperation because there was a part of the people we covered who thought they actually needed us to get their message out or their brand out, whatever the hell it was. Okay. They don't anymore. Okay.
Right.
You're right. I take no offense. You know, it's a little different from us because we've been doing this 1,000 years. Okay. I take no offense that he did not know this young woman's name. Should he have? Yes. In a more polite society, would he have? But we don't live in a polite society anymore, Mitch.
No, we don't. And we don't, you're right. His apology, which we have a little bit of, and I think it warrants listening to, because, you know, he did apologize, and that's important. Just play a little of that, Lou.
After careful thought, I understand that my word choice was extremely degrading and disrespectful to women. And to be honest, that was not my intentions. And if you are a person who took offense to what I said, I sincerely apologize to you. I'm a man who tries to be a positive role model in my community and tries to use my platform to inspire others. And I take ownership to everything that comes with that. And what I did was extremely unacceptable. I'm a father to two beautiful daughters. And at their age, I try to instill in them that they can do and be anything that they want to be. And the fact that during this whole process, I've already lost sponsors and countless fans, I realized that the joke is really on me. And I've learned a valuable lesson from this. And to the young people who see this, I hope that you learn something from this as well. Don't be like me. Be better than me.
Okay, so he finishes up and he just, you know, says to the reporters, his moms and sisters around the world, I sincerely apologize. Now, I have no problem with that apology. I know people are starting to pick apart his sincerity. And that, Mike, to me, is when you go crazy. Guy apologizes. He said the right words. I personally thought he should have mentioned her, Jordan, and specifically, and not, you know, not talk about the business. But other than that, he said everything right. And I think if we have to accept people when they apologize, then I think we should accept this. This is done well. But it did take a little while to do it. And as you pointed out, Mike, he did it on his own Twitter account. You know, he didn't have to call a press conference to have, you know, he took as many takes right. of it as he wanted right. until he got it right. And then he put it out there.
Bob, has anybody ever apologized to you for anything has anybody ever apologized to you, to your face, for anything they said to you?
Not that I can recall, Mike. I don't think I have no recollection of anything.
Well, I'll give you an example. I had a bucket of water dumped on me by Willie Hernandez, a bucket of ice water dumped on me by Willie Hernandez.
Though. You did something.
I did something. I quoted him verbatim on a taped conversation. And he came up and he came up and he dumped a bucket of water. And back then, this was in the late 80s, the Tigers barely apologized. Sparky Anderson said, well, you know, reporters and, this is a tough business and that kind of thing. And when it became a national story and the Tigers apparently said to Hernandez, you need to apologize, he came up to me behind a batting cage and said, I had to do it, man, and walked away. That was the extent of the apology that I got from Willie Hernandez. So we've come a long way. And maybe Jordan should say, it could have been a bucket of ice water in the 80s. We've come a long way when you get apologies like this. But then the stakes are higher, and everybody knows everything, and everything is recorded on tape. And I'm sure if that ice bucket thing had been recorded on tape, maybe it would have been different.
Hey, you know what? But before we get to this weekend's games, I'll just say this. The sports would work a lot better. I just thought of this as you were saying this, Mitch. If there was an ice bucket over the head of the athlete as he was doing these daily media briefings, or a trap door underneath him. And when something stupid is said, you either disappear through the trap door or you get doused with ice water. And I just think everything would go a lot better. Okay, let's go to Cam now, because obviously he played really well against the Patriots and now is part of an intriguing matchup with I don't want to say surprisingly good. I don't think anybody's shocked that the Lions are playing well. But Mitch, that's a good game this weekend, Cam against the Lions.
It's a really good game, and it speaks to the two quarterbacks as well. You know, when the Carolina Panthers play well, obviously Cam Newton is playing well. They don't tend to win a whole lot of games when he's in the erratic part of his thing. And he had a good game against the Patriots, but the previous games were not good, and Carolina hasn't looked that great. So we'll see which one shows up. The Lions have been very impressive defensively.
Yeah,
and this has really surprised people. Though Terrell Austin's considered, you know, one of the budding geniuses. He's always in the conversation for head coach when they come up, and he does get the most out of the players that he has, and they're quite good against the run, and they're really good in short yardage situations. They do let teams sometimes go up and down the field, but they're good in the red zone. And if they can catch him, if they, you know, box him in, I think they have a very good chance of having what would be a big signature win for them. If the offense can get, and that's what's been weird about the Lions, you know, when you have Matthew Stafford in years past, that's been kind of the high point, and, you know, you got all these fourth quarter comebacks and everything, and their offense has sputtered in these games that they've won. I mean, they've had defensive touchdowns and a lot of field goals by a fantastic kicker, Matt Prater, who, by the way, if he was kicking for Tampa Bay, New England would probably have another loss on their record. So I think it's a very intriguing game that could actually put the Lions on a path to the playoffs if they win it.
The funny thing about this circumstance with Newton's performance last week is that given what we've seen over the first 5 weeks of the games of the season, you can't judge somebody by how they do against the New England Patriots. Their defense. I mean, seriously, isn't that an amazing statement? But we would all be in agreement that their defense is so horrendous, and even I wouldn't even call it victory against the Buccaneers. Even in a non-loss to the Buccaneers, there was moments of stress and concern, and it went down to the final play, and it passed into the end zone, and it never should have gotten that far. Well, you know, but that's who they are now. So we'll see how good Cam Newton really is. So he hadn't played anybody lately.
Hey, you know, Bob, you know that I've always thought two of your favorite expressions are, one, you will talk about that there are people who look like other people, and then there's reminds me of.
Yes,
you have absolutely classified what is going on with the Patriots. You have said for years that there are wins and then there are non-losses, and that you're 100% right. That was a non-loss, because every time forget about the defense. Every time you thought the offense was going good last night, and I understand Gronkowski is not there, and I know that they're down Edelman. I get all that stuff. They would do something to stop themselves.
Yeah.
And the bigger, Bob, the bigger story here to me is, I don't see how you can't make lasting judgments at the quarter pole of the season. I get that, okay? But I don't see how anybody could look at this team now and think that it is going to be dominant by the time we get to December.
I absolutely agree with you. The vulnerability is evident. They really should be 1-4. They are very lucky to be 3-2. I can't even begin to put them in the same category as the Chiefs, for example. No, there's nothing to suggest this. So where is the turnaround going to come from? There are major personnel issues on this team.
Well, the turnaround from someone who observes New England instead of living in it, which I think you're always harsher when you live in it, is that they always seem to find people somewhere and turn them into stars alongside Tom Brady. And as you point out, they are 3-2 and not 1-4, even though no matter what they should be. Obviously, if Nick Folk can make a field goal, they lose that game. And watching the Patriots draw two pass interference, roughing the quarterback penalties at the end of a half to give them a shot at a field goal, that's not the Patriots that the rest of the country tends to watch. So, but somehow I have a feeling that they're going to be there at the end. There's another really big game that we need to talk about, which is Dallas Green Bay, which at the beginning of the season, you would have circled this and said, well, here's your NFC championship right here. Not necessarily the way both teams have been playing, but it's still a huge game.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the issue with the Packers just in the early innings of this season isn't their defense. I think their defense has played pretty well. And I think they are as good a bet to go to the Super Bowl as any team in the NFC right now, especially from what we've seen from the Cowboys. But and then Falcons lose to the Bills. But here's a bigger concern with the Packers, and it seems to come up with growing frequency over time, and that is the injury problem. Doesn't it seem as if the Packers lose an important player or two
every 10 minutes?
Right, Mitch? Every single game.
And absolutely right.
And it's a war of attrition with them. I think the talent is there on both sides of the ball. Obviously, they have number 12. But they can't continue to lose people and be, you know, obviously it seems like every season you're hearing, well, they're down to their 19th running back and a guy who hasn't even played in pads since 1968. And it catches up with you eventually.
Yeah, although they have so many injuries early that another part of the storyline is that players start coming back during the course of the season. Like you see that with Jordy Nelson sometimes, you see it with the running backs, and now you see it with their offensive line. Like they started the year with a lot of guys hurt in the offensive line, but I guess Brian Bulaga and what's that guy's name, Bakhtiari, he's coming back. And so they may be better off. Now, the more intriguing team, because they don't have the same body of work as Aaron Rodgers and these Packers, who we always see, no matter what, they always end up there at the end of the season, are the Cowboys. I mean, the year that they had last year, stopped by Green Bay, right, with a field goal at the end of the game, you were thinking, okay, well, this is the beginning of yet another Dallas dynasty era. They're not playing like they did last year.
Nope.
Dak Prescott doesn't look like he did last year, and Ezekiel Elliott definitely doesn't look like he did last year. And you do wonder if some of the off-the-field stuff and some of the distractions, he's a lot bigger name with a lot bigger spotlight and target on him than he was coming out of college, when it was sort of like, hey, oh my gosh, look at what they're doing down there in Dallas, isn't catching up to these guys. They are not the same team right now as they were last year.
You know, I don't want to disrespect the Rams. Maybe they are as good as their record, but Dallas' two losses are bad losses. I mean, Denver, 42-17. Now, Denver's good, but still, that's awful. And you know, you shouldn't be losing. You know, if you're Dallas, you should not be losing to the Rams. So there's some issues here.
Bobby, let me ask you this, because you have obviously had a front row seat to the Patriots when they were great, okay? And if there was one thing that Belichick's teams have done, it is they play through distractions, okay?
Yeah.
They play through Deflategate, and they play through Spygate. They play through all that. But the one thing they had, I was thinking about this the other day, the one thing they had going for them was championship muscle memory. These Cowboys don't have that. A lot of these Cowboys were being born the last time the Cowboys were great in professional football. Mm. And, you know, this is the old Tyson line. Everybody's got a plan till they get hit. Well, they've been hit, Bob, don't you think, in the early going of this season?
They sure got hit on week two. And I think they thoroughly expected to beat the Rams as well. So, yeah, they have. And also, I would suspect that they're starting to carry the weight, of that history, of that failure, of that, you know, it always gets thrown up. How many playoff wins since 1996? And it dogged Romo and his career, and it's there. It's you can't get away from it. So it's interesting. But let me just say in general terms, the NFC. You have a handle on it? Does anybody have a handle on it? The NFC?
No, it's
great. I mean, in the AFC, we say Kansas City looks like the team to beat.
Well, let me throw a trivial question out there, see if you know it. Who has hit 76% of his passes this season?
Alex Smith.
Alex Smith.
Alex Smith. Alex
Smith. Yeah, see that? You made that easy.
Alex Smith. Okay, it may be easy, but it's still surprising.
Yeah.
Alex Smith. I don't mind saying that after the first game of the season if Kansas City has a hot start. But when you're a quarter of the way through and Alex Smith is hitting 76% of his passes and Kareem Hunt has more yards from scrimmage than anybody in the league, and we didn't even know who this kid was when the season started, you can't ignore Kansas City against Houston. You know, it's not a marquee matchup in terms of television markets. You know, it doesn't have the ring of New York, LA, or Chicago, but it is a big NFL football game, Houston
and
against Kansas City.
Mitch, Bob, you know, Bob was joking that now Cam has to go up against, I'm putting air brackets, against a real team in the Lions after having beaten the Patriots. But now we'll see how our guy, Deshaun Watson, this is a step up in the quality of competition. He's going up against the team that has played the best football. So I'm fired up for this game. I want to see how the kid from Clemson does against Andy Reid's defense. Obviously, the Major League Baseball playoffs have started. And what I know, and not many people know, is that Bob Ryan loved baseball before he ever loved basketball. So, Bobby, you set us up.
Yeah, well, baseball, you know, we had the predictable wild card outcomes, I think, and got them out of the way and settled into the playoffs. And right away on the first day of the LDS, we had a couple of notable achievements. One, the Astros got three home runs from the great Jose Altuve. And secondly, Terry Francona rolled dice with his pitching and came up, with a winner, and now has got himself set up beautifully for the rest of that series. He goes away from Corey Kluber and goes to Bauer, and Bauer rewards him, and they win that game. So those two were off to interesting starts. But the Astros, guys, I'll tell you, they were in Boston all last week. And it seemed as if every guy who came up had 20 homers and 84 RBIs. They got a leadoff man have 34 homers. They got a number nine hitter with 18 who hit a home run against the Red Sox in the first game. And it's a potent lineup. But it does begin with that wonderful second baseman.
Hey, and here's the thing about him. And again, baseball is a little different. So what he's been doing in Houston, and he hasn't really had, they had the one, five-game series against the Royals a couple years ago. He hasn't had the platform. He's about to have 845 hits over the last four seasons. Joe Morgan told me a couple of months ago, I wrote a column for Sports Unearthed about this. He thinks that not Mike Trout, but Jose Altuve is the best player in baseball. And I understand this has been a home run year. And the irony is the guy who's going to fight with him for the MVP, Judge, hit more than 50 home runs. And so what does the second baseman do in the first playoff game? He hits three out against the Boston Red Sox. And, you know, it was like, hey, I'm here. Now you got to pay attention to me over the next week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. That to me was a thrilling statement from Altuve yesterday.
Yeah, you remember 2 years ago that you referenced, he batted 154. He had like four hits and 26 tries and flamed out, and nobody really paid a lot of attention. This has all the earmarks of the national coming out party for baseball fans who only watch baseball in the postseason, that everybody is going to know who Jose Altuve is by the end of this postseason. And then they're going to find out that, oh, by the way, he's had more than 200 hits for the last 4 years. You know, this isn't some flash in the pan. He's an MVP candidate every single year. And I love the fact that he's 27 years old. He's one of the few guys in sports that I can actually
post
feel
up
taller than, you know. But his accomplishments, and you know, the way that he plays the game, he's got, the more success they have, the bigger they're going to, he's bigger he's going to become.
And Mitch, let me just say one more thing about this. And you referenced his poor performance against the Royals. I had a long talk with him about that in spring training. And I was talking to his manager, AJ Hinch, about this. And he told me a story about how after they lost to the Royals, Altuve came into his office and said, I'm the reason why we lost. And Hinch looked up at him. He said, no, you're the reason why we're here. Mm. And now he's really the reason why they're here. Not the only reason. This is an incredibly deep, balanced, amazing offense. And if they get any kind of pitching, I think we talked about this the other day, guys. They're finishing the season the way they started the season. Because before the Dodgers were the Dodgers, the Astros were the story of April and May and into June this year.
You know, I'm going to tell you, while on the subject of the Astros and all these players with the 20 homers and the 84 RBIs, it seems like every guy, there is a guy in the middle of all this who is probably the best kept secret in all of baseball. I know I was not sufficiently hip to what he has been about until last week when I got him up close and personal for a week. And Marwin Gonzalez, who plays six positions and is a tough out. And he got a big hit in that game against the Red Sox when it was still a close game with a two-strike double to right center, two-run double. This guy is I mean, who knows, you know, the only reason you even think about him is whoever heard of a name Marwin. Well, he's the only Marwin I ever know. But he is really, really a valuable player, and you're talking about valuable. I hope he gets some votes in the top 10 because he deserves them.
Let's not ignore the guy on the mound, Justin Verlander, who wasn't with Houston, you know, a couple months ago, hasn't lost yet.
Yeah.
Hasn't lost yet since coming over, which makes all of us in Detroit feel just wonderful. And by the way, it would have been interesting. They wouldn't have done anything differently, but you know, he's never lost against Chris Sale. I mean, you know, they went up against Chris Sale a lot of the years when he was with the White Sox. Never, every time they've battled, Verlander's team has come out, and Verlander has pitched better. It's like a 1.4 ERA whenever Chris Sale plays. Sometimes guys get up for the other pitchers, and it was interesting to me as living in a city that seeds all the other teams with great players to see a game one of a five-game series, so we know how critical that is, with two pitchers who basically were acquired, you know, to get the team to
get to that game.
You know,
yeah.
they played most of their careers with another team, and then they came in, sailed to Boston, Verlander to Houston. Here's a showdown between your new acquisitions, and Verlander wins it, you know, and Chris Sale. Now, you know, for everything that he was brought in, all the good that he did to the Boston season, if you have that one bad postseason game when you're supposed to be the guy, David Price has seen this happen to him, and as have other pitchers. Are you suddenly not worth the deal? You know, you're suddenly not worth the money that they're paying. I don't know what they're saying
in
Boston.
Sale is on a very good contract. He's got an extremely team-friendly contract that Bob has 2 more years to go after this one, right?
Yeah, but I'll tell you, that you're right about that. It was being framed that way yesterday, though, in locally, that this is the game, forget everything else. And, you know, he's not pitched well down the stretch. He historically doesn't pitch well, Sale. Mike, when you were talking earlier about how Verlander seems to win the battles, wins all the battles with Sale. Mike, you'll remember very well, I'm sure, how Dave Stewart owned Roger Clemens.
Yep.
Dave Stewart did not lose to Roger Clemens. And Mitch, you're probably right. You know, the adrenaline flow was probably a little bit more heightened when he was winning 20 games, 4 straight seasons in the late 80s and getting no size. And Roger was the acclaimed best pitcher in baseball, and he could not beat Dave Stewart.
All right, talk about there are a lot of people raised their eyebrows when Terry Francona said, "No, I have Corey Kluber who may win the Cy Young Award. I'll pitch him second. I'll go with Trevor Bauer instead." Now, of course, it looks brilliant. I mean, Bauer, his curveball was unbelievable in Game One, and shut. You know, when you strike out Aaron Judge 4 times during the course of a game, your team is doing very well. And I know it's just one game, and, you know, that's all you can react to is one game. But in a 5-game series, and when you've got Corey Kluber coming up, that looked like a pretty good move by Francona, and the Indians look pretty, pretty strong.
Mitch, I will raise my hand, and even though I have seen what Mr. Francona has done, the work he's done at this time of the year, Bob and Mitch, I doubted him. I thought that maybe he was being too cute by half.
Well, you're a big man for admitting that, Mike.
No. It takes a big man to admit he has a small mind. Okay, but here's the thing. Mitch, he saw last year the importance of Game 1 because he managed Game 1 against the Red Sox in the first round like it was Game 7. And now this thing all lays out for him. And guess what, guys? It says 4-0. That was a much bigger beatdown than 4-0.
Yeah.
It could have and should have been much worse last night at the ballpark I will always call the Jake.
Yeah, that was you're right. They left some men on and they dominated the game. You never felt really that the Yankees were in the game after even at 1-0.
And I'm sure it hurt New Yorkers that Jay Bruce was the offensive part of the story because a former Met now playing for the Indians and doing damage.
Mitch, I was doing my other podcast yesterday with Tim McCarver because every year at the playoffs, I do one with him. And he said early on, he said, "I'm going to tell you right now who's going to have a big October." And he said, "Jay Bruce." And I texted him during the game after the double and the home run. I said, "Oh my God, you're more of a genius than I thought you were."
All right, let's switch to something that we haven't talked about here before, but everybody else in the world seems to be talking about, and that is LeVar Ball, the parent of the father of the 3 Ball Ballers, and his own corporation, and in his own mind, a legend, and now apparently a high school, because he has pulled his youngest son, LaMelo, the youngest of the 3. Lonzo, of course, playing for the Lakers now as a rookie, and his middle son starting at UCLA for what will inevitably be an attempted 1-year stay. And now he pulls his kid out of high school, basically saying, if the coach at the high school doesn't want to listen to me, then I'm the team, my kid's the team, and I'll just coach him myself and teach him myself. Here he is on the sidelines of a ball game talking to a reporter about just that.
Are you going to teach him yourself? Math, science, English?
Lonzo, Jello, and all them. Don't act like I can't be educated too.
So you think he, does this affect whether he goes to UCLA or not?
No, this ain't going to affect him going to UCLA. We're still in high school. We're just going to homeschool for 2 years.
Where does he get games in?
I can get him the best game every day. All in fact, I just got to go down to the hood, say, who want to ball with my son? And it'd be ex-pros, D1 guys, JC guys who don't want to study, say, hey, I'm coming up there right now.
Okay. So what you've heard here is the guy has basically replaced high school basketball, replaced education, replaced travel. By the way, it's a shame that he pulled this kid from high school because he bought him a Lamborghini to drive to school in. Mm. And now what's the poor young man going to do? I just get so livid when I hear this guy speak. And I am more angry at the people who put microphones in front of him than I am at him. And, you know, networks, including our old employers, ESPN, and the rest, just turn this guy into, you know, the icon that he gets to be. And I pity the kids growing up underneath this, but I also pity the message that this sends to, because there's another LeVar Ball out there with another kid coming along the pike thinking, yeah, that's how it's done. Are you guys as incensed by this guy as I am?
Yeah, and ESPN is obviously obsessed with him. But a couple of things after listening to that clip. One is, you know, I think I speak for the group here. That's the kind of substitute teacher you would have wanted in high school. Don't you think so? That's the guy you want to walk into the science class and say, I'll be taking over for the next couple months. Second of all, this may be a small part of dealing with this buffoon, but what's this young man's high school transcript going to be like when it is time for him to become a college student? But does any of this surprise anybody? In a world where the reality TV star can become president, guys like LeVar Ball can be king.
Well, the first thing is people are going to be seeing what the finished product is with Lonzo. And in terms of the basketball aspect of this, before we get to the sociological aspect of this, and he's going to be able to preen if Lonzo turns out to be a terrific player, for sure there. But the idea of the overbearing parent thing with coaches, is he going to harass Luke Walton? I'm just asking. Is anybody worried about in the NBA that he's going to be a problem? And here's the one final thing I got to say about it. Lonzo appears to be oblivious to it. I mean, he's floating above it. He seems to have. Am I right? I mean, but all the looks.
Well,
that we've
not
had
if you
him,
listen to his rap record. I don't know if you've heard that particular say. I don't know if it's made your chart yet.
Yeah,
but
no.
he's got an ego too.
Well, I'm sure he's got an ego, but I mean, I just think I'm sure he's got an ego, but I think he said it's always ever known as this guy. This is his dad. This is always ever known. He seems to have made his accommodation with it. I don't know if I can go so far as to say Lonzo is fairly normal, but I think he might be fairly normal. I don't know.
Can I say one thing? That's going to come out as a defense of this man, but you know what? It's okay. You know who he is? He's Richard Williams on steroids. Okay. And a lot of his philosophy comes from Richard Williams, the father of Serena and Venus. And he did it his way. He didn't send his two daughters through the quote system. He was their first coach. He became their manager. And I swear a lot of what this guy's doing in his loud, braggadocious way is built on what he saw from the tennis father. And I know his sons are going into a team sport. I get all that. There's no, in some ways this is a false equivalency, but I will say this. How did it work out for the Williams sisters?
Well, but you can't diminish what you just acknowledged. You can coach a tennis player off by yourself in a corner and then bring that tennis player out and they can dominate. Basketball is the ultimate team game, and you cannot, you know, when he says, I'll just get games up for him wherever, I'll take him down to the hood and we'll pick up games. I mean, what kind of player is he going to end up being when he comes to college, if he gets into college with that transcript, and the rest, you know, and if he's used to, you know, in defense of this poor young man who has no choice, he's the son and he's just going along with it. He's going to think that this is how it's done. You know, the world is built around me. And we've all seen how that doesn't work when you get into a team sport. You know, and how many kids who have had no structured basketball, how many street ball legends are there that actually ultimately make it in the NBA? The NBA, Bob, you know, is littered with stories of guys. Oh, they're legendary on the streets, but they just couldn't make it in organized basketball, and certainly not organized at the level of the NBA where every play is called and all the rest of it. So he's not doing his kids any favors. And Richard Williams, I remember covering Richard Williams. I remember interviewing Richard Williams. It was also at a time that's different than is now, where everything is, you know, this guy is on First Take, it seems, as much as Skip Bayless is, you know, or whoever's doing First Take now. And to get this kind of attention, to me, what I worry about is that it just fosters the next and the next and the next, because everybody looks at him and he has what everybody wants now in America: fame. It's not even money. He doesn't make very much money based on what you hear about these shoe reports and this company that he started, you know, the $495 shoes, because he doesn't want to deal with Nike or Adidas. But as long as he has the fame, he'll keep going. He's clearly addicted to being in the spotlight, and so are the next people that come along. And that's what worries me about it. Otherwise, people would say, why are you making such a big deal about it? Who cares? That's why I care, because he begets others who come after him.
It's good. We're going to, you know what, Mitch, we're going to find out. Okay. I mean, the second son has kind of gone through the normal, basketball growing up process. Now we're going to see with, I don't know, LaMelo, how it works out for him over the next 2 years and whether he's college basketball ready, by the time he gets here. But listen, we've all of us, sounds like the literary we've all been complicit in convincing guys like Mr. Ball that the whole world is hanging on every single thing they say. And he's just the latest guy to make you want to ask the following question. And we've asked it about other sports figures. Does he ever run out of saliva?
Well, I tip my hat to the school for saying, we're sorry, but you don't get to tell us what players get to be on the roster, how many shots your child takes, and whatever. We'll go on. And yeah, Chino Hills, I guess nobody ever heard of it before the Ball kids went there. And if nobody ever hears of it again, so what? It didn't exist. It's still a high school, last time I looked. It didn't exist to make the ball players famous. It existed to be a high school. And if that's all, quote unquote, that it goes back to being, that's plenty. That's what it's supposed to be.
And Bob, you said something before, and when I just said it about the youngest son, it is going to be a compelling story this year to see how Lonzo Ball does with the Los Angeles Lakers. It is.
Yeah, it is. And the evidence, you know, the early returns, what I've seen of him, what I saw of him last year, he has extraordinary floor vision, extraordinary. And we'll see. The shot is questionable, but we'll see. Oh, no, it's going to be fascinating. Absolutely.
Okay, but listen, before we get to our parting shots, we wanted to remind you to take a listen to the hit podcast, Better Off. Jill Schlesinger, Emmy-nominated business analyst and senior CFP board ambassador, tackles uncomfortable and sometimes controversial money and investing issues, which Ryan wants to do, and we just won't let him every week, without the financial jargon, to get to the heart of what's important for everyone to know. Jill interviews guests like Jason Swig, Nicole Lappin, and Michael Lewis to uncover surprising insights and provide actionable information so that you can make the most of your money. Are you paying attention to this, Ryan? This is important.
Every jot and tittle.
There you go. The best part.
What's
of
a tittle?
Shut up, Mitch. The best part of the show, Jill takes listener phone calls every week to help unravel real world financial issues. Search for Better Off wherever you listen to your podcast. That's Better Off with Jill Schlesinger. Jill Schlesinger, Emmy nominated CBS News business analyst and senior CFP board ambassador, tackles uncomfortable and sometimes controversial money and investing issues without the financial jargon to get to the heart of what's important for everyone to know. Now let's get to our parting shots, and Mr. Ryan leads off.
I have spent my whole life loving sport, with a capital S. Many sports, football included. But society could actually live without sport, although I maintain it would be diminished. In all our cherished sports, only one asks its participants to risk cognitive impairment in later life, sometimes as early as the 40s. And so I say football must clean up its act. It must severely punish practitioners who favor helmet-to-helmet hits. It must require that people once again tackle at the midsection rather than launch at either the head or the knees. I have long said that the mothers of America could shut football down tomorrow. I urge them to insist that their sons, if they continue to play, be taught to play humanely rather than savagely. We have more than enough sports on our smorgasbord. We don't need one that maims people and ruins lives.
Was anybody really surprised, according to the Louisville Courier-Journal, that most of the money that Adidas paid out to Louisville in its original shoe deal with the school went to, wait for it, Rick Pitino? Now Adidas says that in its new deal with the school, the money will actually go to the school. Gee, there's good news. I get that the money Pitino was getting from Adidas didn't compare to the fortune he was making from the school. I get how everybody who follows college basketball gods up these coaches and how broadcasters sometimes make you think it's Coach K squaring off in the low blocks against Coach Rick. But coaches should get the bulk of the shoe money when they can dunk the ball. And you know what this really is? It's a small scandal folded inside a much bigger one.
This weekend, Alabama plays Texas A&M. 5 years ago, that game launched the Haley's Comet career of a kid named Johnny Manziel. He was a freshman quarterback who went into Tuscaloosa and came out with 345 total yards, two touchdowns, and a win over Nick Saban's top-ranked defending national championship Tide. And life for Manziel was never the same. We know what happened next. Manziel swelled into a Heisman Trophy winner, then a legend before his time, and finally, a legend in his own mind. His arrogance, immaturity, and Superman-like belief in his own invulnerability led him to foolish comments, foolish associations, and finally foolish and legally troubling decisions. His own father would eventually declare him out of control. He made it to the NFL late in the first round and promised to prove naysayers wrong, but he proved them right, ultimately flaming out in a wave of toxic moves. Today, just 5 years after the spotlight found him, most people have no idea where Johnny Manziel is. He's been out of football for more than a year. Something to keep in mind for young players in every sport who think good stats and winning drives are protection against everything else. I know the words cautionary tale are overused, but that's probably because there are so many of them. Johnny Manziel may be the biggest. Thanks for joining us in this edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. Every Friday and Monday, you can hear us right here and wherever you get your favorite podcast, iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Hit subscribe, and if you do like what you hear, please leave a review. Or if you don't like what you hear, I guess you can leave a review too. But we'd like to hear from you and know how you feel about the show, and tell your friends as well. We will see you on Monday. A lot to wrap up then. Until then, with Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great weekend.